Ballarat, Australia. This is episode 14 of The Normal Blokes, a podcast dedicated to improving the fucking 40k experience. Yeah, no, rock that.
Fuck.
But you find it funny when I talk the words and the words come out of my mouth.
Shut the fuck up, Adam.
Fuck, mate.
That's pretty good.
You think this is a fucking joke? This is 40k, mate. I'm Adam.
All right. Well, welcome to episode 14. Sup, Adam.
Hello.
Sup, Luke.
Hey.
So, today we've got a special guest, Adam Cavalieri from Down Under Network and Gaming Against the Grain. He's clearly introduced himself pretty fucking well. How you going, man?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm really good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
That's all right. Anytime, man. Anytime. What's new with you?
Trucking along, trying to get Down Under Network off the ground. Still working hard, bashing away at it. Got some really big things on the horizon, which I can't announce quite yet. No exclusives for you this time, unfortunately. But coming events that we're going to be covering, we've got coverage of Vic Masters coming up in 2 weeks.
Oh, wicked.
It's a fairly stacked field. It's got the best of Victoria there, which we know is the best state in Australia.
Get off my podcast.
At least a 40k.
Nice, man.
But yeah, no, we've got lots and lots going on.
Yeah, you guys have definitely been like having some good content. I saw the battle report with you and Diffy over the weekend, and of course you got the weekly podcast on the Wednesday.
Yeah, well, that battle report, I talked a big game. I smack-talked the shit out of Diffy, and he didn't give much back. And I was exactly the same on the table. I smacked him around, he didn't give much back either.
Fair enough, bro. Anyone who hasn't seen it, head over to Down Under Network on... you're on Twitch.
Twitch, so it's Down Under, one word, _ network. And check out that battle report. It's pretty good. It's our first one. So, and this was Josh's first game with Orcs, so it is a bit long in the tooth. But it's good content. Check it out, please.
Sweet. All right. Well, on today's episode, we'll be discussing the movement phase and movement in 40K in general. We'll be talking about how it affects gameplay and list design and scoring and some of the different things you can do with movement, you know, on the big scale and the small scale, and some stuff for everyone to think about. The aim of this episode is really to make people aware of things that can be done in the movement phase and to best help their chances of winning. All right. So before we start, just a overview. Of course, anyone who's played a game of 40K knows in the movement phase, you move models from A to B. Different units have different movement characteristics and different units have different abilities like the fly keyword that lets them move through things, stuff like that. Movement essentially does a couple of key things. It sets up for shooting an assault. It allows you to score objectives or deny opponents scoring objectives, and it holds ground for you and denies ground for your opponent. So in terms of I guess for you guys, starting with Adam, because no one cares about Luke's opinion.
Thanks,
man. When you started getting into 40k, how did you think about moving your models compared to now?
So I was lucky enough to play fantasy before I played 40k. So fantasy was a shitload less shooting. And the thing with fantasy was that charges were done first. Before you did your regular movement, you did your charges. So charging into combat wasn't done at the end of the battle round, like after you've done your shooting and your psychic and all that shit. It was literally the first thing you did in your turn. So that meant the movement phase was so much more important because you're going to have to set your charges up in your turn.
Mm.
Into your charge range, they're going to move into places, or you can deny them movement. So yes, that gave me a really good school of thought when I came over to 40k. Movement's the most important phase of the game.
Yeah,
the most important, and I preach this a lot. It's the most important because it's the only phase of the game where your opponent doesn't have any interaction with you. Mm. Make every inch you go, every direction you choose is entirely yours, and your opponent can really have no interaction.
Sorry, you just cut out there, Adam.
Which bit?
just after saying your opponent has no interaction.
Yeah, in the movement phase, it's all your decision making. Your opponent cannot influence your decision making anyway. In every other phase of the game, your opponent has a say in what you do. You know, they can deny you in the psychic phase, they make saves in the shooting phase, overwatch in the charge phase, etc.
Yeah, exactly. And what about you, Luke?
Yeah, movement is definitely the most important. Playing a lot of the good old Inari, you definitely have to set up your movement. You have to think three turns ahead. And also, playing against newly discovered Spore Mines, which came out of the blue, they seem to be a very powerful unit, being able to block movement. So, Adam said, the most least interactive part of the game for your opponent in terms of how much they can do to you. So it's definitely very important. And new units like those Spore Mines can definitely jump up your movement phase.
Well, they're just chucking a spanner in the works. They're just like, your opponent, by the time they're shooting the Spore Mines out, their movement phase is ended. So you're exactly. already like quantifying the board, taking their movement into account. And then all of a sudden, at the end of their, you know, possibly at the end of their shooting phase, they change the board state.
Exactly. It's perfect. What do you mean my knight can't move over the Spore Mine?
Yeah. Exactly. And that's definitely something we'll look at towards the more advanced movement stuff in this episode, you know, little things like that. I know this weekend, or last weekend, me and Luke went to an event. Luke ran Orcs, I ran Tyranids with some Bivores and stuff. And I was just supporting you, Luke, winning games, really. But Spore Mine's been hard.
Yeah, how'd you guys go?
Sorry?
You guys go at that event?
Yeah, good. We lost in the top table game in the last round because Luke can't make an 8-inch charge to save his life.
Yep, I failed an 8-inch charge every game, actually. Every game, I failed that
8-inch. Oh, mate, middle. When you failed an 8-inch charge in front of that Tau gun line, oh my god.
From out of line of sight, it was just...
From out of line of sight, oh god.
And then I was cool.
There's a Ballarat 40k player here called Michael Hamilton who's... And he just says if you fail charges, you're just a bad player.
I'm the worst player then.
you just gotta roll better. And I just actually at the heart of the cards, he needs to go play Yu-Gi-Oh.
But on that topic, shout out to all the teams we played down at Irresistible Force over on the weekend. Three good games, awesome opponents, it was a good event.
Yeah, it's good for us. Yeah,
doubles always fun. But yeah, I mean, in terms of movement, there's always the, I guess, starting off with the basics of offensive movement, you know, getting into the right spot for your units to shoot or charge. That's, I guess, when you start playing 40K, you've got all these tools in your toolbox with your army and you want to set that up. Luke, playing a very, I guess, finesse army with your Eldar and Unari and stuff, mm-hmm. You've obviously got to set up things like firing lanes and charge lanes for your Shining Spears. And Adam, recently playing your Marines, of course, firing lanes and stuff like that are a big part for you. How do you guys think about the offensive output of your army and how does that affect you in the movement phase?
Let's go first.
Oh, you go first, Adam. You're the guest.
Thank you. How gracious. So I think the most important part of the movement phase is what I do before I move a model, which is pre-measure.
Yeah.
I pre-measure fucking everything. Everything that is measurable, like every distance from every range weapon I've got, opponent has, every distance to every objective that I need to get that turn. I fucking measure everything. That's, you know, that's just information gathering. That's just like gathering all my little bits of data I need to like make an educated decision on where I go, what I do. But firing lanes and things, like, I don't know, it seems to be this weird thing where people, regardless of the terrain on their table, like I watch some people play and they like, there's the two, you know, you can deploy defensively or you can deploy aggressively. You know, that's the two basics of fucking deployment, which we're not going into. That was like last episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, the deployment, that was like, last episode, wasn't it?
A couple episodes ago,
But people don't seem to take terrain into account a lot of the time. Like, I play against people and they're like, they've left their Predator behind terrain for some reason. And you can only shoot a scout squad instead of shooting my tanks. Things like that. Always be deployed within easy, like, line of sight of what you want to shoot. Like, most of the time, if you're playing defensively, you want to be out of line of sight, but you should be able to move.
Exactly.
Like, to get within it.
Yeah. Because you never want to be in a position where, you know, you're stuck defending your stuff with, and you've got like, let's say 48 inch guns and you're 60 inches away from what you want to shoot. And it's like, oh, well, that was pointless.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What about you, Luke?
Yeah, definitely a good point on the pre-measure there. I always, especially with the Eldar and RE, you have to like pre-measure everything, like absolutely everything, psychic powers, range of weapons, how far you can move, how far you can fire and fade for those fucking pesky Reapers. And also, you have to sort of, as well, think about, depending on what you got, if you got deep striking units like Shining Spears or whatever, you have to think about where you want to bring them in turn 2 or turn 3, and where you'll need to be, like, incrementally between turns 1 and 2 to make that happen, where you want to go.
Yeah.
So, you can't just think about that first turn. You have to think about 2 to 3 turns ahead, like, I need to be here by turn 3, so where's the best spot I can be between here and there?
Yeah. Like,
plan accordingly.
And if where you're at as a player, like every individual's at different places, but when you're pre-measuring, you shouldn't just be measuring where you need to go to see stuff. You should be measuring where they need to be to see you.
Exactly. Yeah.
You don't always need to think like 2 or 3 turns ahead, but you should always be thinking of a battle round in its entirety, not just your turn.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Because there's, you know, like you said, there's no point sticking your head out to shoot something and killing like 5 models for your whole unit to die.
Yeah, like my best example was I had a guy who he was running predators. He had 3 predators. He had killshot predators, and he deployed 3 of them behind line of sight blocking. It's fair enough. He didn't know if he was going first or second. Then he moves 1 of them out, and all that can see is scouts.
Oh, no.
Is better off leaving it there and waiting for me to move, because he moved it out. All you could see was scouts, and then I get to move my pred out by like 1 inch. I kill his.
Yeah.
Whatever. what you've gained nothing, and you didn't even kill the scouts because you got like 4 shots on your las pred. I got 5 scouts. you didn't accomplish anything. You just lost your predator. Stuff like that, like you risk reward, especially when you got big plays and plays that you know, like kill shot. Like whatever the fire prison one is. Oh, the fire prison one's amazing, where you can have 1.
Yeah, 1 minus sight boy, and then
3. I was going to say, so I think good. You can ignore the movement phase with that one, Adam.
Yeah.
You totally can, because you're Eldar privilege.
Right. So, of course, getting ready to shoot and charge and things is very important, but obviously using the movement phase to defend your army and defensively is another part. You know, we talk about... first off, the topic of screens. You know, everyone who's been listening to the podcast knows our opinion of this. We love using screens to protect our the juicy stuff in our army. And Adam, you played guard extensively for a while, and you've got some experience in this. How do you think about screening your army defensively?
So there's 2 types of screens. There's bubble wrap, and So there's screens and then there's bubble wrap. So bubble wrap is literally placing models so that a model cannot connect with something else. So it's usually defending against the charge phase. Yep. And screening is usually defending against both deep strike and the shooting phase.
Yes.
Screens is projecting yourself, and projecting your influence outside your deployment zone, outside your battle line, outside whatever the fuck you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And so that'll be, you know, moving and advancing like an infantry squad of 10 guardsmen, keeping them all 2 inches apart, and taking up just a shitload of board space, and then doing the same thing with another unit that's exactly 18 inches away, and those 2 units can cut off 3/4 of the board if they're spread out properly.
Yep.
This bubble wrap is putting something like 30 conscripts between a unit of gene stealers and your Lehman Russes, mm-hmm. So that those gene stealers physically cannot make it to that unit.
I was going to say, you continue.
Screens are absolutely integral to the game. Every army has some ability to take screens, but some are a lot more cost effective and good than others. Like obviously things like Nurglings and Scouts are the best screens in the game. They're not good bubble wrap, but they're the best screens in the game because you can deploy outside your deployment zone. Like cultists, poxwalkers, gaunts, and things like that. They're the perfect bubble wrap.
Mm. Yeah, in terms of bubble wrap, in terms of, you know, not quite pushing out but protecting your big stuff, you kind of want lots of wounds, lots of hard to kill models, things like that. They'll physically hold that space as well.
And that comes down to the concept of resilience. Like the two types of resilience is either have high toughness and a good save, or just have fucking shitloads of bodies.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, sorry, Adam.
Unfortunately, this edition is every part of this edition tells you that shitloads of bodies is better.
Oh yeah, dude.
Mm-hmm. In every way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was playing playing a good mate Wayne the other day. He was playing his Gene Stealers, and I was just tucked, literally sitting in a corner with layers of scarabs in front of me, saying, "Whatever hits my scarabs first is just going to get mulched by Tomb Blades, and you're never going to get a good trade against like seven scarabs because that's worth bugger all."
Exactly.
Yeah,
and they're actually comparable to their points to wound cost. They're quite cost effective.
Yeah, yeah.
Those scarabs are insane, man. Wounding anything on fives. And they have, like, what, four attacks each?
Oh, man, yeah.
Like wounds or three wounds or whatever?
Three wounds. Three wounds, four attacks, I think.
Fucking
yeah, crazy. I've had to trim a lot of stuff in my Necron list, and the biggest thing I'm missing is my 3 units of 9 scarabs, man. They're 3 units of 7 now. It's just not the same.
I think it should always start with 3x9.
Yeah, it really should.
Yeah, amazing.
But, yeah, I mean, on top of that, you know, using your movement to screen characters from shooting, things like that, protecting your more important stuff. Then we've got the concept of movement blocking. So, Luke, take it away.
Oh, Denith and Eric's favorite. I'll say Denith and Eric's favorite right now because...
Man, I just enjoy copying Eric right now. I know he really appreciates that.
Yeah. I mean, if his ego wasn't big enough, now it's his. So, movement blocking is... essentially deploying models, or not deploying, more so, it doesn't really come to play in deployment as much anymore, but further into the game, you can sort of block your opponent's movement or limit their ranges so that they can't achieve what they're trying to do. So the best example is Tyranid Spormine right in front of a knight that's trapped between two buildings, can't move forward. Or your one lone scout blocking off, you know, a Bane Blade moving a certain direction to get line of sight on your tank or something.
Mm.
Another perfect example. Like, it's just blocking a big model because they can't move within an inch of a model. So, as long as your model's there, they can't deal with it until their psychic or shooting phase. So, that model is earning its points 10 times over if you're blocking movement.
Yeah.
I think this is a big thing. I don't see enough people do against the big Chaos baddie at the moment. People who don't know what that list is, that's the list with like 7 or 8 smiting characters behind a unit of 30 minus 2 to hit plague bearers.
Ah, yes. Yep.
That army has no shooting.
Mm-hmm.
The only shooting it has is whether or not it takes horrors. That's pretty much all the shooting it has. Or it's some warp bolters, which don't do anything. But I had in the predecessor of that list, which was the fucking Malefic Lords and the Brimstones. I had a lot of success double moving guard screens up in front of that and literally making it so it moves 2 inches a turn. And the same things apply. The same thing applies to Gallants. Gallants don't have significant shooting. If you move in advance up a unit and, you know, get 3/4 around its base on either side, it's not moving anywhere. If it is moving, it's moving backwards, and who gives a shit?
Yeah, exactly. And even things like when you're looking at units that have like a pregame movement, let's say Sisters Dominion squads, or you know, the new changes to Alpha Legion and Raven Guard. You know, if you've got Alpha Legion cultists that are ready to like head off the mark. One bit of success I had against Sisters in like Dominions and Repressors is just deploying a scout unit 9 inches in front of their Repressors. And fuck, it's funny.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you give them turn one. I'm going to take my scout move. Oh, crap, they can't move.
it's an aggressive thing. I don't see people. So there's a lot of armies that can do this really effectively. One of the best ones is Tyranids, but I don't seem to see people do it. And so that would be using the Kraken Advance, the Metablock Override, and maybe a Swarm Lord if you want to take it, on 3 units of 20 Gaunt or Hormigons.
Yeah.
And their deployment zone. With dudes, and they can't move out of the deployment zone turn one.
Yeah,
want to do it? I feel like it's a bit of fun. And then all you do is fly up one Hive Tyrant to give them all synapse, and you're good to go.
Oh, yeah, it's insane!
When you're Tyranid, you don't care if that dies.
You don't give a shit. Like it gives you it basically null and voids their turn one because all of a sudden their movement phase is non-effective.
Yeah, I don't understand why everyone's so afraid of the mortal wounds on a 1 on Termagaunts. Like,
gives a crap. Yeah. I mean, Gene Steelers, you know, maybe. Yeah. But even then, I wouldn't.
But yeah, it's on 4-point models, man. It's just like,
yeah.
Why would you not?
Wow.
Yeah.
Look, Orcs can do it now. Orcs can do it now really easily with the jump, with their double move stratagem, with all sorts of shit. Shit, just like moving, advancing war bikes and storm boys turn one, you can do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, I guess, definitely a more advanced movement technique in denying your opponent the ability to move rather than just moving to, you know, what helps you. And that, you know, when you're playing an objective game and a board control game, that really adds up for the six turns of the game. If your opponent's staying there, let's say you're playing, you know, ETC style with Maelstrom cards and you're on five of the six objectives, yeah, good luck to them winning.
Well, here's the thing I never like to think about. I never like to take into account when I'm... It is shitty, but it's the reality that if you play in a five-game tournament, three of your games aren't going to get natural conclusions.
Yep.
Mm, yep.
So denying them a turn one, letting you get a points lead, unfortunately, in today's the day and age we have at the moment, is a tremendous advantage.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
It's really sad that that's a thing. Mm. But it is. Like, we can't stick our heads in the sand about this. Sorry?
Do you have the statistics on... I know Diffie put some data out about the down-under pairings turns. Do you have that on you?
No. I can make up some arbitrary numbers, if that helps.
I think you can just get it off the...
I think it's available on down-under pairings. I'll have a quick gaze.
No.
I think it was a Facebook post.
Yeah, I was pretty sure there was a Facebook post.
You can clearly tell that we prepare for our podcast.
Yeah, we're all there.
Keep stalling, Denise. I'm looking.
Oh, I can just continue about how you're shocking at 40K, but I haven't beat now, you in
we
like
need
seven,
about three
7 months.
Episodes. Three episodes.
Yeah. we'll let Luke look, and I guess I'll just talk some shit at Denise.
Yeah, in general.
How many different movement profiles should you try and get in an all-comers army, Denise?
Well, I don't know. It's tricky. I mean, I played a lot of 6-inch movement fucking Marines for a while. But it's always good to have units that can reach out and touch stuff. Now, if those units function well on their own or not is another question. You know, like, you can play a list where the whole army flies around it, you know, moving 12-plus inches a turn. You can play other armies where you sit in a corner and slowly advance into the middle and have a few key high-scoring units, so high-moving units. Classic example is kind of like a guard brigade with, you know, three custodial shield captains versus something like just a standard, you know, tau gun line that has, you know, maybe a devilfish or maybe some riptides that can really quickly move. But I think it's... What do you think? I think it's really good to have at least a couple of units that can really burst out when they need to.
I agree. And now you don't need to have it like the actual movement profile, but you need to have some kind of movement shenanigan.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Whether that's a deep strike or a jump pack or whatever you want it to be, a double move. I think every army that's not a gun line should have some ability to reach out quickly. Yeah. There's a few things into a bit more of the advanced stuff now, but active placement is a big thing to take into account when you're building a list.
Yes.
So if you look at the vast majority of the ITC missions, all their objectives will be placed between 18 and 24 inches away from each other.
Yep.
Placement. A good all-comers list will have 1 to 2 units that can go from one objective to another in a turn.
Yes. Yep.
So that means a unit that can cover 18 to 24 inches. Now, if you've got a unit that moves 12, and the objectives are 18 inches away from each other, with a decent advance, you make it to that objective. The 24-inch range ones are a bit harder.
Yeah.
To do that, you need the things like the double moves.
Yeah, and I think one of the final topics we're going to look at is specific things that different armies have. You know, if you play one of these armies and you're looking for something you can use, I guess in the next part of our show will talk about that. Luke, how are you looking on stats?
Oh, I was about to say, completely irrelevant to what you guys have been saying because I wasn't listening. I was looking up the stats. So, apparently, out of... I won't give the numbers, but I'll just give the stats. So, 53% of the games played are complete naturally. But 63 percent of those here we go. Are the games not ending in tabling? 63% ended naturally. And by naturally it means completed 5 or more turns. So that means 40% of them don't finish. Correct?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's insane.
Yeah, Adam, you're right. You know, if you go to a 5-round event, you're only going to finish 3 of them. Holy crap.
About 3 of them are going to finish naturally.
Yeah.
That's unfortunately
not even 6 turns. That's 5 turns, though.
Yeah. That's not even 6 turns. That's not even the ITC standard 6 turns.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I watched one of the Warzone Atlanta streams this week. Just took place. And the game that I watched was against Drakari and Blood Angels. So neither of these armies are things that have mass amounts of units or, you know, play multiple phases at the same time, like Yunari and shit. And they had 3-hour rounds. And at the top of turn 2, so the start of turn 2, it's on the clock.
Yeah, true.
They took 2 hours for deployment and turn 1.
Mm.
Yeah, that's insane. Dude, coming full circle, you know, if you do something so drastic like that metabolic overdrive, a big push in at your opponent's turn 1, what are they going to do for like the rest of the time? Like,
yeah, exactly. But so take that shit into account when you're playing games, guys. Unfortunately, it's not a good thing. It's a necessity.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, and average number of game turns is 3.51 turns.
Wow. So the average game only goes for 3.5 turns.
But that includes games that were tabled. So.
Okay.
But yeah.
But there's like 8 games in there where Liam Hackett's just skull dragged some four people.
So I think take into account metabolic overdrive. Just don't get tabled in the next couple of turns.
All right. Well, I think, yeah, like I said, the next part we'll talk about specific strategies. And now that Luke is fully aware of what we're talking about, do Eldari have for movement, man? I've heard they've got a few good ones.
Yes, there's very good ones. I'm sure you've heard them and felt them, Denise. The most common ones are the Inari, Quickening, and Soul Burst. Like, there's the
I'm having a post-traumatic stress attack.
So those Shining Spears moving up to 66 inches and charging, or 2 separate units moving 44 inches and charging. It's really cool. You got the Fire and Fade, so after Reapers pop out, they shoot and they hide back again. You've also got like the tricky redeploy stratagems. So sort of, here's my unit of Dark Reapers in the open, deploy over here, and then Phantasm jokes are on the other side.
And then just bail onto the other side.
So there's a few stratagems that affect it. There's some cool ones that you can do as well. Like there's the Harlequins ones. So you can... Well, it's not coming to play very often, but it's a nice little trick. Like you do the Harlequin fusion boat. Bunch of fusion dudes inside. Move it up with the relic so it can auto-advance extra 6 inches as well. You shoot the cannons on the Harlequin boat. Then fire and fade it so it gets an extra 7 inches, and then you can shoot the fusion pistols.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, it's cool. So there's a bunch.
There's one that they have for a stratagem to essentially redeploy their characters. Yeah, if you've got a Shadow Seer, whatever, and a whatever next to each other, you can pick all 3 up and just move them. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
They have Heroes
Path or something like that.
Yeah,
Heroes Path.
I think that's it.
And they've got that other thing. They've got the Warlord trait or a relic on, they can put on a Troop Master that allows him to get out after the boat's moved.
Oh, yeah, that's the funnest one.
Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, we call that's it crazy. Captain Jack Sparrow in the Black Pearl. Because the boat can, move, do all that shenanigans. And then, so it
Captain
moves,
Jack fucking flies out.
Yeah, and he just jumps out. So after the boat moves 28 inches. It's 28?
I think it's 28 because it gives some bonus to move.
Yeah, it's 16, auto advance 6, and then auto advance 6, so 28. An additional 6. And then he can actually get out and then charge as normal because Harlequins.
Bonkers.
So, yeah, definitely, going against those kind of armies is good to know those things. One big thing about, going against, let's say that the classic unit is Shining Spears, knowing how far that unit can move. If it's set up on the table understand that it can move. If it's Samhain, you know, it can advance 20 up to 22 inches of movement. Then it can be quickened, and then they can shoot something next to it. Then it's Soul Burst. You know, 66 inches of movement. It's just up in your face. Mm-hmm.
But there's things you can do as well. Like, so a common one that I always do with, you know, for example, Magnus. So when he moves 16 and then can warp time again 16, you can deploy like your units in a line at those marks of movement, so 16 inches, 32 inches. And because he's got such a big base, it's easy to do, but you can do the same with Shining Spears, you just have to measure it a bit better. You can move and block them, and it's just, it's so effective. You just move and block them, make them hold their dick in the open.
In the charge phase where they can't charge over units, as long as you make them land in front of your bubble wrap, they can't charge shit behind them.
And they're useless.
And that's one thing, you know, the layers of your army, the layers of the bubble wrap you've got there with stuff like Shining Spears, you can really jam them now.
Mm-hmm. If you guys want to see me go absolutely spaz with my pre-measuring, watch me play a game against Double Spear Inari. Like, fuck, man.
It gets like that versus Inari. Hey, you're like measuring like all these different things. It takes ages.
Usually by turn three, I'm drunk because I just don't care anymore. Again.
Well, I just need to know everything that they can do to me before they do it. So just so it's not demoralizing when they do it.
How double-edged sword? You're saying?
Playing Marines, there's very fuck all options that I can do to stop them doing whatever the shit they want. Mm. So it's just about being realistic with myself. What am I going to have to lose here? Like, what am I going to have to give up here to not lose the game?
See, like, Luke, when we were playing that doubles event, the first game we had, we were playing against Demons and Yanari. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Spore Mines were like a blessing and a curse, because we'd chuck Cronus Spore Mines everywhere, and every time they'd try and cast Soul Burst, I'd just be like, the Deeper Shadow, you can't do it. You need to roll it on one dice on a seven, and Soul Burst never got cast. But there were so many Spore Mines to kill that they were just Soul Bursting all day in their zone.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty rough.
That's one of the things I do as well. I usually put some scouts up, like spread out some put one unit of scouts up, spread it out really good, Templars, and just try and bang, deny the quicken, and that shuts down a lot of them.
Yeah, it's so hard though, because I found Adam, because obviously the Black Templars have a similar strat. It's so hard to pick the correct power to do that too, because they're all so fucking good.
And the thing is, like, if you stop the quicken, then they just soul burst.
Then they just soul burst, yeah.
But all you gotta, but see, my game plan, why I measure so much, is because I bet on them only getting 44 inches. If I can play to them only getting 44,
yep,
I can stop a lot of shit. 66, I can't stop. They can do whatever the fuck they want. They can kill anything they like. In a Marine army, they can kill whatever they want.
Mm.
They can jump over. You don't have big enough units to zone. You don't have enough bubble wrap to stop them connecting. I can plan for. So yeah, stop either one of them, and we got ourselves a soup.
Yeah, yep.
Strange fucking word use.
All right. Well, the next one that can, you know, slingshot pretty hard is Tyranids. So for those of you who know Hive Fleet Kraken, their adaptation is when they advance, they roll three dice to pick the highest. Kraken also has a stratagem called Opportunistic Advance, which allows a unit to double their movement, including advance. And what unit can advance and charge, guys?
Is it Ravenous?
I don't know.
Oh, I think it's Tyrannofexes.
It's Tyrannofexes.
It's definitely Gene Stealers. So we're looking at what's the average movement of a Opportunistic Advance Gene Stealer? I think it's like 20 or 21 inches. Yeah. So we're looking at
movement 8 base, and then 3d6. Usually you get a 6 times 2.
Yeah, okay, so 28 inches. That's huge. Combining with...
Just 20, you scrub.
Wait, 6? Oh, I'm fucking shit at maths.
They move 8 base,
yeah,
and then it's 3d6, double the highest one. So usually it's a 6, which comes to 12. Yeah.
Oh, you can do maths, man. Good on you. 20 inches, so... TLDR, they're a Shining Spear.
Totally. Yeah.
And then they've got their good friend, the Swarm Lord, who pretty much in the shooting phase gets to do an extra move for a unit within, 18 inches or something, or 12 inches or something like that? Can't remember the exact number. But yeah, that Gene Steel unit's flying into your face 40 inches, and then it's charging something. And then on top of that, they have a stratagem called Overrun, which is at the end of the fight, or after a Steeler unit fights, or any infantry unit fights, if they're not within 3 inches, they can make a move, so they end outside of 3 inches of an enemy unit. And what's really cool about that is they can go in, murder something, and then overrun out into safety. Or what they can do is declare a charge on one thing, murder it to shit, overrun close to a unit, and then pay 3 command points to fight again. And what they can do with that is pile in and consolidate, but not fight, onto a second unit and just wrap it up.
But yeah. A Hive Commander, the double move is only 6 inches.
Is it only 6 inches? Oh, thanks, man. So, but still, you know, that Steeler unit could be catapulted across the board. So what do you guys think about this? How can you, you know, stop this pushing your shit in?
So, unfortunately, there's a lot of armies that can't, because it's so fast it just runs around you. Runs around your screens, or it just thing you have to do is lay your army so that they can't declare the 12-inch charge on what they actually want.
Yeah,
the unit they want to wrap, they can't declare a 12-inch charge on. Well, sorry, you have outside 12 inches of your first layer screen they're gonna have to connect with.
Yes,
be 12.1. Just try and, you know, plan for 13 inches, and it makes it easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when they run up and stay 1 inch away from that first screen, they can't declare a charge on the next layer of your army.
Yes.
But then you're kind of good. And also, there's ways of arranging your units so that they can't be wrapped.
Mm-hmm.
Arrowhead formations, so that they can connect with the point of your unit, but everything's base to base in an arrow pointing, so they can't get the back edges of your arrow are too far away from them to get around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and deploying like that, you know, I recently with the Necrons, the entire goddamn army I'm playing has a fly keyword, so wrapping, I'm just forgetting how to avoid wrapping. But the little things like that, you know, if you have all your stuff base to base and you take your models, your casualties really smartly, you won't get wrapped. You know, you'll be able to fall back. And even if one thing we were playing around with is, you know, lists that have a lot of vehicles. You can tuck the little corners of the vehicles into one another so they can't actually wrap the sides. Then you can just fall back one by one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what NIDs have. On top of that, we've got Gene Stealer Cults, who are getting a codex soon. That's probably going to be terrifying. But one thing that they have that's pretty crazy is, you know, they have a command point that allows them to roll 2 dice on the Gene Cult ambush table. And for those of you who don't know, you know, if you roll a 5 on that table, it allows a unit that comes in outside of 9 to either move d6 or shoot. If you roll a 6, it allows them to move their normal movement. And pure strain Gene Stealers actually have the same rule as regular Gene Stealers, you can advance and charge. So if you're rolling a 6 on this table, which if you have a Primus, you roll 3 dice for that stratagem, re-rolling it, of course. You know, and you pop a 6, those Gene Stealers are deploying outside of 9, moving and advancing. Now, how is that different to regular screening of Deep Strikes, guys?
I almost think that this one you can barely block against. Like, the fact that they can move after they Deep Strike makes it so much harder. But you just got to plan for screening out things 12 plus extra away. But it's just so hard to do. Yeah, I've tried it very hard, it doesn't work.
Yeah, one thing I found with this one is because they drop in and then they move, you've got to not only screen distance, but you've got to physically body block them in certain areas. Like, like I was playing like this against this with Marines. Sorry, if your scouts are too far away, they can just fly straight through them.
Yeah,
they just go random.
They don't care. Yeah.
So for me, there's two ways that I see of addressing this, and that the first one I've already outlined, which is having stuff, you know, more than 12 inches away from your front line. The other one is just having things 3.1, 3.5 inches away from their front line, so they can't hit you with their pile-in. They have to tap you with their consolidate. So that with 1 3-inch consolidate, they'll be able to wrap effectively, if you do like a little saucepan.
Yes.
And you tie your ends a bit further back. Now, the advantage you can do that is you can have that second layer be something that's actually got decent amounts of attacks in combat, and it actually is a deterrent for them trying to get that wrap on. Because Gene Stealers, they're not that hard to kill. They've only got a toughness for the 5 plus involved.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you're playing Apple. You have Marines. Marines don't have a good option. I was going to think of guard, but Borgrins aren't a good option for this either because they're just not going to charge in that direction if you've got Borgrin there.
Damn, that's exactly right.
That.
What do Marines have? I don't know, like Death Company?
Yeah, look, Death Company can do it. They're something that Gene Steelers will not consolidate into. No, they can't do it.
Or Orcs, just have a squad of 30 boys behind it.
Yeah, a squad of 10 Gretchen and a squad of 30 boys behind it. They will not pile in. That's just...
Actually, at a doubles tournament, I did a squad of Zangors versus a squad of Orcs, and Orcs won. It's good.
Orcs won even when the Zangors charged, eh?
Yeah, it was crazy.
So the reason you have to avoid them tapping you on the pile-in is so they don't get to attack if they declare you as the charge.
That's very good.
If they tap you on the consolidate, you get to attack them, they don't get to attack you.
Yeah, it's perfect.
So that's a huge deterrent. That's a whole like, oh, well, all of a sudden I just give my unit away for free. And hey, me putting them in this position, what I've just done, I've just traded a unit of probably pure Gene Stealers for 10 Gretchen.
Yep, and that's a loss. Yeah,
it's a dumb move. So all of a sudden you're telling your player, your opponent, you can't put them there. I trade for you. It's a horrible trade for you. Those are the things you want to try and do. You want to try and, you know, they're big plays because what's a unit of 20 pure strain gene steals? It's like 300 points or something now because they're like,
are they 15 each?
I think they're 2 or 3 points more than the regular ones. So yeah, there are a lot of points. And you cannot afford to give those away.
No. Yeah, that's I mean, definitely when you've got those offensive unit, things like I think Gene Steelers are very similar to like Bloodletters, you know, they have massive offensive capability, but when they're out in the open they just start melting. So you really want to make sure when they hit, like if you're a player that's playing these units, you know, when you hit you need to get that good trade. And one thing that I know we were talking about before the show, Luke and Adam were talking about, you know, how to make orcs work. You can't just have one big threat. Sometimes you need to overload with two or three things, you know, have two units coming at you, or have, you know, your gene stealers with your Kraken gene stealers hitting at the same time.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right. If you're going to play, do you know why they're called bombs, guys? Why we call them bloodletter bombs, Zangor bomb?
I have no idea.
It's because after it goes off, there's nothing left.
Oh, yeah, okay.
If there's no guys who charge left, everyone's gone. Just like a bomb. A bomb goes off, there's nothing left, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you get to keep your unit. It comes down, it kills, you know, five things, and then it goes away.
What you're saying, Adam, is we shouldn't call it the Guardian Bomb. We should just call it the Guardian Hammer.
Because they don't fucking...
They literally don't die. Yeah.
Pieces of shit.
The farmers, bro, the farmers.
I know, dude, I'm so jelly. Like, if I was playing Eldar right now, I'd be running three Guardian Bombs. I think they're incredibly good.
Yeah. Anyway, back
except
to topic.
Except when you're me, right, Denise? I did two Guardian Bombs on you, and they killed, three Scarabs.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. The Scarabs ate them.
How does that even... What?
Adam, I roll very poorly on the common.
Dude, you need some new dice, by the way. How did you fail 3... 8-inch charges rerollable on the weekend. That's out of control. Anyway.
I do the impossible, but the negative impossible.
I rolled a 2 on my 3d6 on my Gorkonaut. How did that happen? All right. And the last unit, I guess, the last unit type we wanted to cover, it just generally like super fast moving units. We've got things like flyers, things like for the Tau, the Cold Star Commanders, things like the Harlequin jet bikes that can just fly across the board and charge. You know, how do you guys deal with these units? What are some strategies you have to deal with just general fast moving units if you don't have something like that?
Things like Cold Stars, and they're not cheap suicide units. Yeah. So if you see someone with a Cold Star, it's pretty easy for you to analyze your army and pick the one or two things they're going to go for.
Yep.
The easy options for you are to place your one or two things in advantageous positions. So, like, it's quite easy to block a single, like, infantry character from getting got by a four...
Fusion gun
Cold Star. You just wrap it in some scouts.
Yep.
If you want suicide in... You can't shoot the scouts. The worst things is things like tank commanders. Like when I was playing Pask, You know, I just have a fusion commander just come up and pop him, and there's very little you can do to stop that. So what you're going to do is just accept it's probably just going to happen and make sure you get that advantageous trade in your way. So the things that I would do with Pask, and I'd put him on the front line knowing that that's going to happen top of turn one. My opponent doesn't get any penetration into my army when he does that. So he's still in front of all my shit. I don't have to turn anything around. He can't be out of line of sight when he's shooting a Pask, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, he can't not trade that unit.
Yes. Yes.
So what do you want to do?
I mean, one thing that makes those Cold Star commanders with fusion really good is that they have the melter. So one thing you could try is you know, if anyone trying to screen up against this, they're scared of that actual 2d6 pick the highest, is just pushing a bubble out for where that Cold Star can actually land or move to.
Absolutely. So yeah, what's the range in the fusions?
I can't remember if it's 18 or 12 for Tau.
I think it's 18 for Tau.
If you push him out.
Oh, that's a big bubble.
But you just got to push him out past 9.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah. So
that is doable.
Yeah, yep. And that means, you know, if he's got 4 shots, let's say they all fully convert, that's average 14 wounds. You know, anything less than all converting, you're probably not going to kill Pask.
Our Hemlocks, which is, we're talking about flyers here, Hemlocks are one of the worst offenders of this.
Oh, yeah. They do whatever they want.
So the issue with the Hemlocks is they're a suicide unit that's not a... Like the Guardians, yeah? Because they don't leave nothing there. So you can suicide a Hemlock, and except the thing is, it's not going to die because it's -2 to hit and it's got 2 saves. Armor save, then it's got its spirit stones. Like, it's really hard for a lot of armies to take care of. Like, back to guard again. Orcs with, if you don't have looters or tank buses, orcs, you just can't kill fucking flyers. Tractor cannons. Yeah, you kill flyers.
Yeah, tractor cannons. Ooh,
but honestly, do you know what I will do every fucking time if I was playing Eldar? Fly my Hemlocks in, kill whatever's giving, you know, breaking heads or giving out buffs and shit, and let it die to the tractor cannon, blow up in the middle of their army. I'd be so happy to do that.
Except mob rule makes them leadership 30 anyway.
But that's fine. Like, absolutely fine. With the amount of mortal wounds you'll pop out on that, you'll be getting such an exponential damage return for your unit.
That's true.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Even you could just go up and people take, 18 fucking tractor cannons if they're retarded, because I don't think that's actually good. You go up and you park one Hemlock in the middle of those, and the Hemlock blows up, and, you know, kills. Same thing next turn, just be like, I dare you to shoot your tractor cannons at me. You've got 18 tractor cannons within 6 inches of this flyer, and you can't shoot at it.
Yeah.
All right, and it will take all of you with them, and you've got your 400 points with the tractor cannons, and I've used 400 points with the flyers. I'll take that as a trade.
Yeah, no, all day. And if you're playing a kill points format, you've just killed 7 plus kill points.
Exactly, I was about to say.
For your two flyers, yeah.
They're a kill point each, man. It's insane.
Mental.
Stuff like the Hemlocks, the issue, like I said, the issue with them is that they've got decent range auto-hitting guns. They've got 2 saves.
And then,
-2 to hit, possibly -3 with lightning reflexes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I mean, they're definitely such a versatile thing. I mean, they're like a surgical psychic beacon as well. You can roll up and jinx stuff on them. And then in
your opponent's turn, because you know the psychic phase happens before the shooting phase, they've got a chance to deny something you want to do.
Exactly.
But the biggest thing you have in your advantage when you're against flyers like that is the size of their base.
Mm.
I'm going to give them really poor places to land because the size of their base. I think their base is almost a 4-inch diameter, so 4-inch radius. So
yeah, I think it's 6x3 or 4.
Is it the night base size?
Yeah, it's the night. It's a little bit smaller than night base, but it has to be 1 inch away from everything. So you can leave big holes in your lines and still zone that guy off if you're taking that base into account.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love when I was playing Marines and people would roll up into my line with a Valkyrie full of stuff to drop out turn 2, and you just advance your whole, all your scouts around the Valkyrie and blow it up so they can't disembark and everything just dies.
They do nothing. It's so tough.
Yeah.
And that's actually something that people are going to find with the Morkanaut when they start suiciding Morkanauts full of knobs.
Oh, yeah, they're just dead.
Don't put shit inside your Morkanauts, guys. It's a bad idea. All right. What was the last one you had there? Skyweavers.
Yeah, I mean, similar concept to the Shining Spears we talked about with Skyweaver jet bikes.
Mm.
Quite similar.
Yeah.
Depends what they're playing, though. Like, if if they got vehicles, I always think Skyweavers in combat aren't that good until a bit later. I think their shooting's better. Like, just using those haywire cannons and whatever you can until you...
There's one thing that Skyweavers can do that Shining Spears can't, and that's fall back and charge.
I was about to say that exactly. You know, you can fuck with Shining Spears by charging into them, because that means they're hitting at strength 3. I mean, it's neg 4. It's still fucking strong. But strength 3, but then they can't easily fall back and charge.
Yeah, exactly.
But Skyweavers don't care. They're just always jumping in and out.
Mm-hmm. They're a different beast. And unfortunately, that means they're a lot harder for you to deal with when you're in your planning. Mm. As an Eldar, have you played with Skyweavers much, Luke?
I have a bit. But I only like it when you... I forgot the sprite it is. When you shoot a knight, you charge it, they fall back to knight, and then you do the strat to shoot again. It's my favourite.
How have you been taken apart? How have your Skyweavers been taken apart?
Generally, when they don't have a 3-up in mole. Other than that, they're pretty... They last for ages. When they lose CP, that I find that's when they die. When you can't lightning fast them, when you can't 3-up involve them.
Yeah, I remember Simon was talking when he was using them, obviously for his ETC. He really relied on a lot of CP to keep them going.
Yeah, I found the same issue. That's why I like to run Eldar Seuss, but I find if you go the Harlequin Skyweavers, you have to sort of like max it out almost.
Yeah, you got to build around that, don't you?
Yeah, you build around it too much.
Yeah. All right. The next thing we've kind of talked about, general deep strike blocking. We've talked about, you know, keeping a screen out, things like that. What about defense against being wrapped, guys? So I know I'm playing a list right now that's got a lot of melee, a lot of flayed ones and stuff, and they're pretty fragile. They're pretty much toughness 4/4 up saves. And the way I kind of play them is I'll charge something, I'll kill it, and then I'll have something next door that I'll just quickly wrap so they can't fall back and I'm stuck in combat. What are some ways you can not get wrapped? Because I'm sure if you're playing with a lot of shooting, that's really irritating.
The basic one is the easiest one, just have your screens with fly.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so that's the easiest one. I think that's like that's Scarabs. I think the Swooping Hawks is another one that gets used a bit.
Or Wave Serpents. Wave Serpent spam seems to be big at the moment.
Oh, that hurts my soul.
Yeah, it's fucking terrible to see. You're like, oh, I'm going to get like 3 vehicle kills this game. That's it.
Yeah, if I'm lucky.
You just can't kill them.
I'd rather fight 4 knights than 4 wave serpents. Not gonna lie.
do you know why I like fighting the 4 knights?
Why?
Losing, it's gonna be over quick.
Yeah.
wave serpents, you're losing, you're there for fucking 7 turns.
Dude, they're bleeding you with those scatter lasers.
Yeah, consistently losing for 7 turns with very little I can do about it.
Consistently losing. Someone make that my fucking name. Denis consistently losing against...
Put that on your next ATC shirt.
And yeah, like, you know, having a lot of fly keyword units you can use for that, or having models that you can get out really quickly, even if it's an infantry unit. We had a bit of a stuff around where you could pull up a transport next to a wrapped unit and get them in. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was the thing that got ruled that way at ATC, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a good time, man,
because you actually did it, didn't you?
We thought about it. Luke had it done too, and that was a bit contentious, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah, I sort of had it done too, but by the end of the day, I think the TO, we had arguments about where you could place the wave serpent because of its base and where you took measurement to the hole. Because he had the hole of the wave serpent like over one of my cultists, and I was like, you can't be that close because you need to measure from the hole. And he's like, no, it's to the base. I'm like, it says in the hole on the data sheet, so... And then because of that, he wasn't within 3 inches of all his models, so he couldn't do it.
Yeah, I would have said that you were right, but fair enough. I wasn't there, I wasn't TO. TO's ruling stands.
Yeah. He said it eventually ruled in my favor, because I was like, he said because the base was out, and I was like, it says to measure from the hole. And then he checked it, and he was like, yeah, okay.
But yeah, I mean, there are some ways, you know. Well, come back to Necrons, they have ways to pull stuff out. You know, Tau Sept, of course, if you've got stealth suits, they've got ways to pull stuff out. They have fly keyword anyway. One of the Septs, I think it's Daleth, have a stratagem where the stealth suits can teleport out of combat and they can act as they didn't fall back.
Oh, okay.
Dark Strider, the special character, lets you fall back and shoot.
Okay. What a beast. What an absolute beast.
he's a piece of shit. He makes me want to take sniper.
So Luke, how many Tomb Blades does a Riptide with the vector targeting thing kill? How many do you reckon?
Oh god. With the upgrade, the 3 up 5 up?
No. Just Nova charging with plus one to hit against fly. How many Tomb Blades do you reckon that one Riptide kills?
Yeah, but I'm saying, do the Tomb Blades have the 3 up 5 up?
Yeah.
Okay. Still all of them.
Yeah, like squad anywhere between 6 to 9.
Yeah, that's fucked, man.
So that Riptide potentially makes all its points back shooting Tomb Blades. James pushed my shit in with Riptides this week. Just FYI.
Yeah, Riptides are absolutely fucked, man.
Yeah. And, oh, dude. And, yeah, even stuff like Tau, you know, they're big gunships, the Riptides and stuff. They've got Fly Keyword, right? They can just bugger off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can just fall back. And it's just so hard to get into combat with Tau now with all the fucking... You lose Fly Keyword in the charge phase.
So I played at ATC singles before I did the team event, and I think I went 4-2 as well. I think I went 4-2 for the singles and for the team event. But one of my losses was to a Tau army, 80 strike marine, whatever, 85 warriors. And then in front of those, he had 2 units of 10 shield drones.
Fucking painful.
Behind that, he had 3 Riptides, and so he just moved that as a little brick. He had them all on moving trays. He just moved them on a little brick, and I had all my Catachan guard and all this shit. And I'm like, I can never charge you. there's no point upon this that I can charge you in. And because he had his guys in lines in 10-man rows, 6 inches deep and 6 inches across. So no matter which direction you charged at, you were charging drones, not strikes, and you're getting overwatched by all the strikes. And they had, in the middle, they had 2 Kadra Fireblades, an Ethereal, Darkstrider. Yeah, everything.
Imagine doing that without the Fly Keyword now. It's just impossible, you know?
I was going to say, before the FAQ, I'd give my good friend, the Blood Angel Captain, on Baal a call and send him in.
Exactly, yeah. But even then, he has the issue. Well, he charges in and he kills, what, one, maybe 2 units of strikes? It still doesn't get his points back, and then he just dies.
Yeah,
like, it's still not a good trade.
I'd probably try and dive Darkstrider and tag as much as I could at that stage.
Yeah. But the thing is, you can't charge over the units anymore.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You can't do it anymore.
The other thing that's crazy is the Riptides have a 3-up inbound in combat.
They're such a top hit, man.
Why?
Why
do they have a 3-up inbound in combat? 2-up, 3-up.
What the fuck? They just get it. They just turn on the never reactor. The guy presses a button and he just decides that he wants a storm shield.
Yeah, and he kicks his toe doing it and suffers mortal
wounds. Yeah, it's like, oh, no, my toe.
What, you mean you can't do that? I do that all the time. Like, I go in the morning, I'm like, it's raining. Oh, yeah, I'll just have the storm shield just turned on. I push the button in my neck and the fucking, you know, the 3-up invuln activates.
Oh, that's insane. Like, if it was just to shooting, that would be all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
But combat.
Because then it's the same as a knight. It's a comparable
to
a knight.
Literally a knight, yeah. But not even a knight can do that, bro. The knight can only get to 4-up if it's not a 4-12 knight. Mental. All right. So, look, I guess finishing the episode, because we've really covered a lot of things we wanted to talk about, you know, and we wanted people to think a bit more about movement. What bit of advice would you guys give to... players who want to, you know, improve their game and think about the movement phase more, what are some ways they can increase their skill set? So we'll start with Adam.
Measure. I can't say this enough. The amount of people I see who at the start of their turn one don't measure a fucking thing. Measure fucking everything, guys. Even if you don't think it's relevant, measure it. It doesn't matter. what is the distance from you to me? From every one of your units to every midfield objective. Yeah. Do it. Just
it's
do
so
it.
True, though. Yeah, it's funny what you're saying, but it's so true.
Your shit's going to live through their shooting phase and what you're going to have to use to get on that fucking objective. So every fucking unit in your army should know where it needs to go to get on that objective.
I love how you said, even if you don't know, just measure anyhow. Just imagine all these people just measuring, like, nothing on the table.
Between terrain features.
What are you doing? Like... I'm doing what Adam told me, man. I'm just measuring the table.
So I just need to know that. Yeah, dude, just do it.
What about you, Luke?
Pre-measure. It's a big one. Make sure all your distances are within where you need to be. Make sure you line up your psychic powers. Maybe just practice it. Maybe go through the first couple of turns of a game, practicing sort of where you need to be and incrementally placing everything, making sure it's all perfect, and getting in the habit of pre-measuring and making sure everything lines up. So you psych your power's 18 inches, make sure it's 18, make sure it's line of sight if you need it, all those sorts of things. And make sure your ranges, you can outrange what's going to hurt you while trying to be in range of what you want to hurt, if possible.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, you know, I would advise, you know, always have a plan on what your army is going to do and move in a certain way for a reason. Don't just do something willy-nilly and just get tabled. Have a setup of what you want to do this game, where you want to move to, and how you want to do that. And yeah, think about that before a game even starts. And then you can use all this data you're getting from measuring and pre-measuring and figuring out what your opponent's going to do and win the game, I guess. So,
Just another one. What Simon and Eric always say is to have a game where you just play and you don't shoot, or you have one turn of shooting or one turn of combat where you actually fight, and the whole other rest of the game, just try and move. Just focus on the movement and see if you can win the game, or at least not get majored.
Would you guys, I'll get on my, if you guys will let me, I'll just jump on my soapbox for like 1 minute.
Go nuts, man.
On this. So, a unit in your army no longer has options is when it's dead.
Yep.
As long as your unit is on the board, you have options with that unit.
Yep.
So if that means deploying it where it can't shoot anything on its turn one, but it can't be shot by anything on their turn one, because as long as it's on the board, you can do things with it. If you're giving it up and thinking, oh, I might go first, I might seize, I might this, might that, get rid of that thinking. just deploy your shit out of range of their shit, and all of a sudden you have a chance. You still that unit, that play you've invested in, still has legs. The only time it doesn't have legs is when it's not there anymore.
Yeah, that's 100% right.
Yeah. Cool.
I'll step off my soapbox.
That's right. Well done, man. Thanks. Great. All right. Well, any closing remarks, boys? I'm pretty sleepy.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys. It was a great episode.
Should I sign out
as Chopper, or should I sign out as...
I did like your Chopper intro. You can pop that off for a bit.
I have to say a word to get in. I say right. As soon as I say right, I can do it.
Yeah, you first word has to be like an intro. You can't just start with...
a fucking word to start it off, but as soon as I say right, it's on.
Yeah, you can't start with like a however, can you?
But,
all right, well, look, thank you for listening to episode 14 of the Norm Blokes. Thank you, Adam from Down Under Network and Gaming Against the Grain, for hopping on and joining us. If you guys liked our content, please like us on Facebook and subscribe to us on iTunes, and have a good rest of the week. Turn it up, let it start.